You're listening to The Review, first broadcast on the 24th of March 2012 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Review, live from Studio One here on Monocle 24 with me, Emma Nelson, and Gillian DeBias.
Coming up on today's programme, we'll find out what books have sold well this week from a trio of independent booksellers in Calgary, London and Melbourne.
You know, there were books that used to be banned that you had to ask for in a certain way behind the counter, and, you know, all sorts of shenanigans went on. So, yeah, there's some good history.
We'll also be joined by DJ Strange Fruit from the Norwegian band Mongolian Jet Set. He'll be bringing us the latest on Oslo's nightlife.
And we'll be flicking through the pages of our favourite magazines with Benjamin Eastham, editor of White Review magazine.
All this right here on The Review on Monocle 24.
Hello and welcome to Studio One at Midori House. Good morning.
Good morning. Are you all right, Gillian? We had a small injury when we were doing that just then, weren't we?
Yes, no, I bit my tongue, but we're absolutely
We've
fine.
Got
no ambulances. 54
minutes to get through. Can you cope it before we start with an ambulance?
I'm fine. It's nice presenting the show with you.
It's lovely.
And nice
it's lovely despite the fact that we're being dragged indoors from the exquisite spring weather. I mean, Thomas Schaffernacker has just mentioned in the weather that it is unusually warm. It is just gorgeous out there.
But what's not to love, with great magazines, a pile of glossy magazines and interesting magazines, coffee, good company.
And just ideas of what to get, and then you can take all your magazines outside and enjoy the sunshine.
Exactly.
Speaking of going outside and seeing things, Gillian, you've been a wandering this week, haven't
well,
you?
Well, I joined the Monocle team in San Francisco, and it was such an inspiring trip. I mean, I think we all came back absolutely glowing, inspiring on like every front. That
you were out there. There was a big Monocle trip out there too.
Yeah.
There was a big conference, wasn't there?
We did
GE.
A conference on GE, which was really interesting, which is just tying in with the whole kind of maker theme and looking at how people are really going back to wanting to, yeah, exactly, and to make things, whether it's to make really techie things, but with their hands and hardware, or more crafted things, and how in San Francisco, which is so known for technology and creativity and creative industries can work really closely together. Great group of guests, really, really inspiring.
Something that plays exactly into Monocle's hands, but with GE, I did sort of think, what would GE be doing with this? Because we've always been doing sort of craft and handmaking and artisans, and GE is just so big.
Yeah, but they were talking even about the blades in their engines, that, you know, to start, they have to work out the best plastic. The things are crafted with knives, and when you go to their plants, you actually, it looks like a craft factory, you know, even though they're, you know, for these huge industries.
I read somewhere that your that the people who'd gone to this conference were quite astonished by the fact that there's such a large element of fun involved in creating things in the artisan world, that people who had clearly been battered and bruised by the last couple of years in the financial world have just thought, actually, no, I want to do something that really satisfies me. And the word fun came screaming out at me from all the stuff that I'd read about it.
Absolutely. And because I was also doing a film there, and the film followed the same theme of people actually going back to making things. And we filmed at the tech shop, which is literally like a gymnasium for equipment and hardware, where, you know, you may go for a gym for an hour to work out. No, people after work will go and make something. And we talked to one guy who used to be a business consultant, and he gave it all up to be an inventor. And there he was inventing
things. What's he invented?
He invented something very clever that my cameraman was excited for, which was like a tiny, tiny, tiny mini sort of Steadicam, but you know, went over my head, but my cameraman was very excited.
I can understand that, because a Steadicam is, for those of us who have seen or carried a Steadicam, it's a huge thing that you have to attach to your body. It's enormous.
Yeah,
it's
and like these are for the tiny, more SLR cameras. So it's for the new, now that everyone's starting to work on the Canon 5D. So they're...
And you were extremely excited when I saw you this morning to tell me about a restaurant you went. You actually printed out the menu.
I did. The one thing, I mean, I think we were all excited by different things, but I came away so excited by the food movement there and the energy that everyone is putting into creating small restaurants with beautiful, beautiful food, emphasis on local produce. And we're doing some filming in a suburb called Sunset. It's right as close as you can get to the Pacific Ocean. And the restaurant was sort of run by surfer dudes, and it's called Outlanders, and small, only 8 tables. And so my menu, which I did print out because I have to keep
revisiting. She's brought the menu into the studio.
I had cumin-crusted pork tenderloin. Delicious. Which was divine. But the dessert was probably the best dessert pudding I've ever had. And it was salted caramel pot de crème, dark chocolate, and rosemary caramel popcorn.
Rosemary caramel popcorn.
Absolutely.
And Mr. Bias will be recreating this recipe in the confines of our studio before the end of the hour, if only. Next time, bring me some back. I'll sit vicariously in this chair when you all go
it
off.
It was, but, you know, and that was just one of many meals, but it was the energy in it. I mean, talk about creativity and pleasure.
Gorgeous. Thanks, Gillian. We're listening to the review on Monocle 24. In a moment, we'll be having our regular rummage through the bookshops of the world. And we start today, as ever, with this trio of bookshops. First of all, we visit... Where do we visit, Gillian?
Well, I think let's go to London Soho and the Society Book Club. Here's Babette Perreno.
Well, I am Babette, and I run the Society Club with Carrie Kanye. The Society Club was sort of... We set it up 6 months ago. And what our aim is to bring art, literature... and people together. And but to do that, we serve coffee. We have a communal table. We encourage people to bring their dogs. We encourage dog-friendly community. And we try and encourage conversation. In the window at the moment, we have quite a big selection of Charles Dickens. They're actually the issue from Vintage. They've just recently done them. And they're just amazing covers. We also have Shock, John Waters' amazing book. It was actually the first book he wrote, and he's a brilliant writer. I think over the last week, the books that we sell a lot of is Simon Van Bowie. He's a brilliant, incredible writer. I mean, the beauty in his sentences, the construction is just, it's delicious. He is based in Brooklyn, and we are very, very lucky. He's coming here to do a talk next month on the 25th of April. And he'll be talking about his new novel. But also, he'll be talking about his philosophy books. He did this amazing series of books on love and why we argue. I mean, just they're incredible. My personal recommendation at the moment for a current reading book would be John Waters' Role Models. It's hilarious. It's like belly aching hilarious. You find yourself just bursting into compulsive giggles. It is a very, very good read, but also an inspiration. The moment I'm personally reading, it's a vintage Soho book. Called A Soho Address, it was written in the 40s, and it's all about the sort of Jewish community that lived here. And it just brings alive the colours of Berwick Street Market, how the children lived, school, everything. The community of a bygone age.
That was Babette Perreno from the Society Club in London Soho. And Emma, I love the fact that the bookshop is in Soho, and what she's reading now is a book very much about the culture and the community of Soho.
It's all London.
Isn't it great when local booksellers also sort of really pull in books?
Well, I mean, in Soho, she's absolutely sort of sitting in the heart of everything. So she's got, she's got no shortage there. What I found astonishing about that is that normally when we do the book review, with the bookshop tour, you listen to just a voice. Whereas in the background there was music, which is very unusual for a bookshop, because bookshops usually have, just promote quiet. But obviously she's got this, I think the society, anyone who's ever been to the Society Club in Soho will realise that this is not just a bookshop. It's got tea, coffee, cakes, lots of
things. And I loved when she said it's dog friendly as well.
It's also advertised as selling a homemade jam, which I thought was just a delightful thing that you could find in a bookshop. No, it's an incredibly charming place, and she just seems so sort of delightfully but quietly steeped in all that she sold, and there was this quiet passion to what she did. She was quite amazing.
It has a quite retro feel, but I love the fact that more and more bookshops are also curating events around it, so it really does make it a community, and I think here they have a really wonderful programme of reading and events.
Because actually people do like to talk about books, which has often been the great gap in the sales marketing element of bookshops, is that no one really has promoted the intimate discussion of books in the shop.
Well, exactly. And it goes against the whole thing of the virtual community or the virtual non-community of Amazon. People who love books and love buying books, they also like their community. And so they like talking to other people.
Well, that was the Society Club in London Soho. Let's head to Calgary now to visit Pages Books on Kensington.
My name's Simone Lee, and I'm one of the owners of Pages Books on Kensington. Pages Books on Kensington has been around for 18 years. I myself came on about 5 years ago. We are known as Calgary's literary meeting place. We host many, many, many author events here in the store and then off-site as needs be. We have a baby story time that we've started up since I came on that's very popular with the local young children. Pages Kensington is famous for our creaky floors. Everyone that comes in comments on our creaky floors. Some people love it, some people say it must drive you mad. We don't notice it anymore ourselves. The building is an old building. It was actually a public library. And so some people come in and say, oh my goodness, I used to go up those stairs and for my story time 50 years ago. And so it has good literary bones. The space inside is quite modern, I think, and it opens up very nicely with large front windows that overlook the busy Kensington Road. Pages has a lot of long-time customers, people who have been coming here since the store first opened, and more and more we're getting some of the hipsters and the people who come to the very trendy neighborhood of Kensington, but I like to think that we're growing our customers with the children who now come to the store. A lot of our bestsellers are tied to the events that we do, and so in just the last week, we had Billy Collins, the ex-US Poet Laureate, here in the store, and so we sold a lot of Billy Collins books. We also hosted Irshad Manji, and so you'll see that our bestseller list reflects that as well. We do a lot with local authors as well. And they bring us in their books and we sell them for them. And sometimes it means that a local author will sell more copies than Margaret Atwood. And we're very proud of that. Our front display store window this week is really a hodgepodge. We've got a book about sex. We've got children's books. We've got a novel with an Andy Warhol-looking cover. Just looking at it recently in the snow, thinking maybe it's time to do a green display. Basically, any book that any employee in the store likes can go in the front window. We're pretty egalitarian about that. I would love to sell as many copies of The Hunger Games as a huge box store does, but people don't come here for that. They come here for more carefully curated selections, things that actually reflect where we live. And I think it's really important, that a store can be individual and show back to the community what Calgary is all about.
That was Simone Lee with creaky floorboards in Pages Books in Calgary.
Talking about the sound of a bookshop.
Absolutely. Starts off with a turn of the page and ends up with the creaky floorboards. I did enjoy that because a moment ago we were talking about how the bookshop in Soho, London sells Soho-based books, which is easy to achieve because, the London authors dating back centuries and centuries. But this bookshop in Calgary, which actually goes out of its way to get authors to bring their books in.
And that they can sell more than Margaret Atwood. Isn't that great that, again, people are celebrating their local community? And their local writers.
I did quite also like the idea of her getting the hipsters in. I hadn't heard the word hipsters for quite some time. And I was quite charmed by that. And I was also charmed by the idea of how children grow up with a bookshop. And it suddenly made me think that actually a bookshop is a very reassuring place when you're an adult because your parents might have taken you to a book. Well, I was certainly taken to bookshops as a treat when I was a child. And there was this is where I was allowed to run free and not break stuff because you can't break stuff in a bookshop. It's fantastic. And this is possibly why I enjoy bookshops now.
And the shared experience. Mm. You can leave the kids and they'll be playing around with the kids' books and the grown-ups.
It's fine to leave kids in the bookshops because they can do nothing bad. They can only, they can only improve their brains. And it's just such a cunning ploy by my parents, I suspect.
What I love is now we're sort of, as well as asking them what books have sold well, we sort of ask them to step out the front door and talk us through the window displays. And I love what they put in their displays and also talking about the covers because the covers of books are really important and a huge amount of sort of thought and creativity go into them.
So. She seemed to be quite happy though of having a hodgepodge in her window. This is obviously the attractive element to her shop. So instead of the neat the neat things that we see normally. We get, she said she fancied a bit of green, it being the end of winter. I could enjoy that.
Well, Emma, how about, shall we go down to Melbourne now?
Oh, go on then.
Hi, I'm Rosie Morton at the Paperback Bookshop in Melbourne. This is a small independent bookshop that's been here since mid to late 1960s. And I'm just crouching on a small stool here in the kids section in the bookshop at the moment. The shop was designed by an architect years ago, and we've kept all the same shop fittings. So it's a sort of little nook that kids come and hide away in. It's a very small, crowded little space. So we're in the CBD, but we're up the top end of the city near Parliament House. It's sort of a quiet end of town. Lots of shops around here that have had the same proprietors for years. There's a couple of old Italian tailors down the laneway here. There's some theatres around here, so there's a very old established coffee shop called Pellegrini's, which was one of the first kind of places to get a good coffee in Melbourne. So it's a sort of nice, old-fashioned part of town. I don't know, I think perhaps people have an affection for something that hasn't changed, that's sort of done the same thing for a long time, has a certain appeal. Perhaps there's something about books themselves that sort of lend themselves to that. Actually, I have people coming by who used to work here when it first opened, you know, amazed that it's still here. So that's really nice to have that kind of, I don't know, continuity and those sort of stories about what it used to be like. And, you know, there were books that used to be banned that you had to ask for in a certain way behind the counter, and, you know, all sorts of shenanigans went on. So, yeah, there's some good history. Well, there's a couple of good Australian books that are really popular at the moment, two non-fiction books, one about the state of Australian politics at the moment by an Australian journalist called The Australian Moment. And there's a thing called A Quarterly Essay, which is sort of a, you know, a short essay in book form, and the latest one's about sort of humans and their relationship with animals by a journalist called Anna Crean. That's really good and really popular. Yeah, not so much fiction around at the moment. It seems to be a time of year for non-fiction. Oh, well, In the Window, I'd have to go and look to remind myself.
Let's go and have a look.
Okay, what have we got? Vanished Kingdoms, that's a Norman Davies book about old Europe. Some oldies, there's an Alain de Botton book there. There's a new book of poetry by Roberto Bolano, and some art books and things like that that don't normally get seen otherwise. It's a mixture of stuff. Yeah, occasionally something old that's been sitting on the shelf for a long time that needs a viewing. I guess, yeah, we're a bit unusual in that we keep the shop open till late in the evening, till 10 or 11.30 at night some nights. It's sort of always been that way. We work in tandem with the coffee shop next door. Back when this shop first started and Pellegrini's first started, there wasn't much open in the city at night time. It's hard to believe these days. But so I gather it was kind of a place to meet and to hang out. It's quite different during the day. It's office people and students, or just people who are in town for the day, tourists. Nighttime, it's some people who work late shifts actually come in, but also people out for a night out, and people meet here when they're going out on a date, that sort of thing.
Rosie Morton there telling us about people going out in dates, an initial date in a bookshop.
I think there have been films made about this, whether it was Notting Hill Books and the travel bookstore. I think
it's quite a place to take someone from a new date, because it takes you straight into who they are. You can't just sort of circle around with a, you know, going to see a film. But if you go to books straight away, that tells you so much
about
someone.
Yeah, when you find out, you know, who their favourite authors are, how much they love reading, and it's
that's opening your soul a little early. Yeah. I'd fear that's something. That's at least that's a third date, I'd say. I quite enjoyed Rosie's idea of the seasonality of books. She said this is the time of year for non-fiction. And I'd never really considered that books have a season.
Yeah, exactly. And then as you edge into summer, then you have your holiday reading, and I'm sure back to school feeling in September.
And then the biography comes out at Christmas.
Yeah. And one of the things I want to do, and to chat to our producers on the review, is to start looking into also specialty bookstores. When we were in San Francisco, we went to the William Stroud bookshop, which is all architecture. And it's an amazing view in a city to look at the a bookshop just curated about architecture. And I think we can play a little bit about doing like travel bookshops and food bookshops and architecture bookshops.
Because it tells you more about the city than it does actually than your average bookshop.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
All right, well, you are listening to Monocle 24 with me, Gillian Tobias, and Emma Nelson. Next on the review, we hear some new music from Oslo. Stay with us.
The Urbanist is the show about the cities we live in, and it introduces you to the planners, thinkers and architects who want to make urban life rattle along like a well-tended tram, not grind to halt like a taxi with a flat tire.
We see that our community is changing, and we have two alternatives. We could make it an eyesore in the community, or we could make it a shining jewel. And we chose to make it a shining jewel.
Leave the countryside to the softies and listen to the show that knows that a bit of grit and bustle is good for you. That's The Urbanist, premiering every Thursday at 1900 London time, here on Monocle 24.
With a team of 25 dedicated correspondents and bureaus in Zurich, Tokyo, Hong Kong and New York, Monocle 24 keeps you fully informed on events around the world, around the clock.
For Monocle in Caracas, I'm Sarah Granger.
For Monocle in Abu Dhabi, I'm Christopher Lord.
For Monocle in New York, I'm Aisha Spears.
For Monocle in Tel Aviv.
In Sao Paulo.
In San Francisco.
In North Vancouver.
In Manama. In Paris.
In Ramallah.
For Monocle in Hong Kong, I'm Liv Levichnik.
Bangkok.
Los Angeles.
In London.
Buenos Aires.
In Bogota.
In Toronto.
In Laetitia.
Keeping an eye and an ear on the world. This is Monocle 24.
And you're listening to The Review in London on Monocle 24.
Time now for our weekly music review. And instead of the nice, quiet, sedentary atmosphere of the book bookshop review that we've just had, I think we can turn things up slightly. We're going to Norway. And on the phone from Oslo, we have Paul Nuhors, also known as DJ Strange Fruit from the band Mongolian Jet Set. A very warm welcome to the review. Do I call you Paul or do I call you DJ Strange Fruit? Let's get the formalities right.
No, please call me Paul.
Hello, Paul. Now, you, we said just then that we're going to sort of pick up the pace a little bit. You are disco through and through, is that right?
Sorry, I'm...
You like disco.
I love disco, as well as heavy metal. And lots of different styles of music, yeah.
Well, you've joined us on the line to talk to us about Oslo's music scene and also to bring us some music that you like, and we'll hear a bit more of that in a minute. But tell us what's making the dance floors of Oslo move at the moment.
I think the dance floors in Oslo has always been quite eclectic. It's sort of a mixture of styles, basically. I mean, you have house clubs and you have techno clubs, and but mostly things is a bit mixed up. You can as well likely to hear house and techno mixed up with disco, danceable rock music, post-punk, jazz stuff, whatever, basically good music.
Now, is this music Norwegian born and bred, or is it international?
It's very international, but of course also the Norwegian stuff gets mixed into it, but it's not really very local music-based. It's all sorts of music. Lots of British music, American music, German music, which I guess is what club culture is about, you know, mixing up stuff from every country.
And you also, because you're part of, is it Mongolian Jet Set, which I'll ask you to talk to us about in a moment, you do actually, you remix and you collaborate, don't you? So you bring international music into Norway and take Norway out of, you know, and take Norway to the rest of the world.
Hopefully, yes, in a way, that's what we do. I mean, we do, mostly I actually do collaborate with Norwegian artists, but yeah, we've collaborated with, we remixed loads of different acts from around the world, and we have collaborated with American artists, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Gillian.
I think we'd like to hear a little bit of the music that's playing in Oslo, so you've picked some music for us. Can you tell us a little bit about your first track?
Well, the first track is a track which is not really new, but it's one of my favorite Norwegian tracks from the last 2-3 years. It's by this band from Bergen, and they're called Calcio Kids. And they do a mixture of music. Obviously, it's in the name. They're fond of Calcio instruments.
Well, let's have a listen to it before we talk about it. This is Calcio Kids with Fortihus. It's Calcio Kids and Fortihus, breaking the rule on Monocle 24 that we don't have songs that don't have words in them. But they're the choice. That was the choice of Paul Nuhors, who's he's DJ Strange Fruit, more commonly known in Oslo. Pearl, why did you choose Casio Kids? Because our producer, Marcus Hippie, said that growing up in Finland, this was the kind of music that he would describe as, dare I say it on Monocle 24, farty disco.
Farty disco, yeah. Well, in a way, I think that's quite what a lot of Norwegian dance music or Scandinavian dance music is about. I mean, to me, this particular track, I think it's... I mean, obviously, I'm fond of fart sounds when it comes to synthesizers and stuff like that. And
is that a musical term? Is that a musical term?
Well, you can use it as a term when you have those kind of beepy, bleepy kind of synthesizers. Yeah, I guess. But
I suspect I shouldn't have opened my mouth with that and gone down that particular subject. I mean, Casio Kids have been described as Scandinavia's premier poptronica outfit. Is poptronica very big in Scandinavia?
It's quite big. I mean, it's probably not necessarily that big in the charts, but you have certain artists like Casio Kids in Sweden. You have, I guess, The Night, Flicky Lee. In Norway, obviously, Røyksopp, which is like the biggest act within what you can call electronica pop. The pop tradition, I guess, it's more of a Swedish thing, actually. I mean, all the greatest pop music has come out of Sweden when it comes to Scandinavia. I guess in Norway, we mix it up a little bit different. Maybe some of the Norwegian stuff is a bit rougher, in a way.
Well, let's hear your next recommendation. You've chosen for us Deja Vu by Lindstrom. Can you tell us a little bit about this before we hear it?
Well, this is a track from the brand new Lindstrom album called Six Cups of the Rebel, which is sort of his experimental kind of album. I mean, it sort of differs from the other releases he's done, as it is a bit more experimental in texture. And but Lindstrom is also a typical example of, obviously, I mean, he's just like a friend of mine, but also a guy I really admire because he's very open-minded towards music. I think he's already got two other albums coming out later this year, or maybe next year.
Well, let's have a listen. So this is Deja Vu by Lindstrom.
And that was Lindstrom with the song Deja Vu. That was the choice of Pal Nurhus, who's also known as DJ Strange Fruit, bringing us the latest from Oslo. Pal, this is the Lindstrom is a moniker of Hans Peter Lindstrom, isn't he? He sort of makes electronic music with a nerve. That wasn't dance music. That wasn't disco. What exactly was that we've just listened to?
Well, I don't know. It could be it could be like a modern kind of a Frankie Goes to Hollywood track, actually. If you know what I mean, I think Lindstrom is obviously influenced by the 70s and 80s, and then he's doing his own modern production of it. But to me, it kind of reminds me a bit of British music from the mid 80s in a modern way.
He does have quite an edge to him. I read somewhere that one of his songs is called "I Have a Drink in My Bedroom and I Need a Hot Lady." I mean, you're a personal friend of his. He sounds like quite a lively character.
No, well, that's okay. Hans Petter is probably the mellowest, the most mellow character I know. He's like the most family man I know of. He's like the total opposite of what his song title is about.
I guess any musician has to have rock star lyrics, though.
Yeah, of course.
Now tell me, do the musicians really aspire to kind of go global and export, or are they really quite happy to have a strong sort of music scene and stay within the borders of sort of Norway, or even maybe just beyond in Scandinavia? Or do they have dreams of going global?
Yes, of course, everyone likes their music to be appreciated globally, and especially with club music, which is really a global kind of music. I mean, Norway is so small that even if you sell a lot of records in Norway, it would barely cover your costs. So I mean, I think it's important to have an audience outside of Scandinavia.
You've got a very strong Norwegian music scene, though. I mean, obviously, you were friends with Lindstrom. Does everybody work with everybody else? Is it a very closed environment?
Well, it is not that many people working within this particular kind of within the electronic music field. But the few who does it does really, really strong work. And yes, obviously we collaborate with each other. I mean, my partner Knut in Mongolian Jet Set mixed Lindstrom's last album, and Lindstrom has been he's also playing on our records as well as. Other people from the scene like Todd Terje or Disc Jockey, yes, we do collaborate a lot with each other. I think that's natural.
And obviously you're a very integral part of the DJing scene in Oslo. It's Saturday. I could get on a plane in the next 5 minutes and get myself to Oslo. Where would you take me tonight?
Well, I am playing at a club called Chaos, so if you want to hear me, you should go to Chaos, which is in the east part of Oslo. You should also check out Jäger. Jäger means hunter, but it's also the name of a very famous Norwegian author who lived about 100 years ago. And he was like, his name was Hans Christian Jäger, and he was like the first bohemian artist of Norway. So, I mean, the name is a homage to him. And Jäger is probably the best club in Oslo at the moment for dance music. They have interesting DJ bookings and a good crowd and a good sound system, everything which is what makes a good club.
Now, you mentioned your band Mongolian Jet Set just there. I've been on your website. You don't take yourselves terribly seriously. We're going to say goodbye to you in a moment and play some of your music, but tell us just a little bit about what Mongolian Jet Set's all about.
Well, first of all, we do take ourselves really serious, but not in in a serious way, to put it that way. I think we have a certain sense of humor that we bring into sometimes into our music or into our websites and stuff.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but your website says that I think it's a quote attributed to you, Paul. It is you operate as a channeler for a parallel world. Is that correct?
Yeah. Actually, I mean that's fun stuff to do, isn't it? why not open up?
I couldn't think of anything nicer. I'm afraid time's run out on us. Paul, introduce your song. It's Bella Lane, isn't it? Tell us about it.
Bella Lane is probably our most untypical song, but it's in a way it's also. Kind of like a homage to early 80s kind of pop music. This is like a pure pop track. It's probably a track that people like or they don't like it, which is maybe what makes pop music in a way. It's a song called Bella Lane, and lyrically it's a bit of a mystery in the lyrics as well. It's apparently about the dance floor situation, but it's really about ghosts and murders. So there's some dark themes here in a pretty jolly tune.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul Nørhus. This is also known, should I say, as DJ Strange Fruit from the band Mongolian Jet Set, and here's some of their music. Paul, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Section D is Monocle's weekly design show, hosted by me, Hugo MacDonald. It's a show about making things better. Each week, I'll take you on a rollicking romp through the worlds of design, craft, architecture, fashion, and graphics, with factory frolics, building tours, product tests, and studio guests.
They're beautiful, they're functional. When you use them, they are completely poetic. They lift that activity, whatever it is, to another level. It makes you aware of the quality of what you're doing.
Tune in every week to hear the stories behind the things that we live with. That's Section D, premiering each Tuesday at 1900 hours London time, here on Monocle 24.
started with a shop in London's Marylebone, and now Monocle also has stores in New York, Tokyo, Hong Kong, and a shop-in-shop in Osaka. And then there's the Monocle Cafe in Tokyo. Come in to find exclusive collaborations with brands we believe in, from Barena jackets to Porter luggage. Great for gifts, even better for personal treats. And if you're missing an issue from your Monocle archive, we can soon fix that. Visit monocle.com for store addresses and opening times. The Monocle Shop, carefully crafted design, proud of its provenance.
Welcome back. It's Saturday. You're listening to The Review with me, Emma Nelson, and Gillian DeBias.
Now, every Saturday here in Midori House, we pick some of our favourite magazines to rifle through. And to help us dissect them, we're joined in studio by Benjamin Eastman, editor of White Review magazine. Welcome, Benjamin.
Hello there.
Now, first of all, you have in front of you, the newest copy of the White Review. I wonder if you can explain really what it is. What's the idea behind it?
Well, it's an arts and literature quarterly. We've been going just over a year now. The first issue came out in 2011 in February. So we're on to the fourth issue. The idea behind it really was just to create a magazine that gave equal space to the visual arts and literature. We felt there wasn't that kind of thing in existence in London and in the UK. So, myself and a friend started it.
And it's very much about discovering unpublished work. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I suppose one of the reasons we were compelled to start it was, as young writers and graduates, both of us working in literature and the arts as writers, we felt there weren't really enough avenues for young writers, unpublished writers, to get a start. So we wanted to provide some kind of space in which more established writers could be juxtaposed with younger writers and give people an opportunity to get out there. We didn't think that existed anymore.
Benjamin, how did you get together with your collaborators?
Initially, there was two of us.
Just speak a little bit closer to the microphone.
Sorry, is that better?
No, that's lovely, thank you.
Initially there was two of us that started, and we had a whole network of writers that we had worked with previously in our respective jobs before starting the magazine, and we were very keen to give them a platform. And once we had that initial setup, then we started contacting other people whose opinions we respected, and they recommended people. And initially from that very small network, it mushroomed really, and we've had more and more submissions, and they've come from further and further afield. And that's allowed us to expand really, and to get really new and unusual voices from all across the world now.
What strikes me is you get new and unusual voices from across the world, yet there's a wonderful interview with Will Self in your last magazine. And so obviously you're attracting the big names already. And what I really enjoyed about the Will Self interview was that it is long. It is pages and pages and pages long. And it's very, very rare to actually get such space afforded to just one writer.
Well, that was a really important thing. To be honest, we pinched that interview format from a New York magazine called the Paris Review, because we always really enjoyed the fact that they gave long interviews to people and you were allowed a little bit more into the mind of a writer than is typically allowed by the quite formulaic and short forms you see in other magazines. And it was all part of this idea that if we could bring big names in, and we've been very surprised and grateful for the goodwill we've been shown by people like Will Self, who have been prepared to come and help us and to do these interviews. And that gives a little bit of weight to the magazine, which I think is great for other writers who can be in there. They get to learn a little bit about the practice of Will Self and to have the joy of being in there next to him.
There is so much out there in terms of books and magazines. What gave you the confidence to think there was space for something like this?
Probably just blind optimism, really, initially. What I think we didn't feel was being provided for was things that really had a really good design element and that incorporated the visual arts and showed the same degree of concern for the visual arts as for literature. And we wanted to broaden that out so we have reportage as well, so we have people writing long features about different parts of the world and the political circumstances there. And to bring that together in one publication to reflect the fact that people do have interests beyond the niche of a certain type of literature or a certain type of the visual arts, or politics or reportage. So bringing that all together in a way that would appeal to people of my generation and who have a breadth of interest, which I think people do, and it's not quite acknowledged sometimes.
Your magazine is, am I right in thinking it's not the enterprise is non-profit making, is that right?
Yes, that's right.
How does that affect or shape the way that you put your magazine together?
Well, it's the guiding principle that the non-profit, I suppose, to justify our status as a non-profit, we have to continue to give unpublished voices an opportunity. So there still has to be this push to put things in print that wouldn't otherwise get into print. There's always a temptation once you receive offers from bigger names who suddenly would like to be published or are willing to be published to just start doing that. But I think that would be something of a betrayal of the initial point. So I think that idea of it being non-profit, that we're not the choices we make aren't made for commercial reasons, and that's important.
I think it's interesting you want to introduce people to writing and good work. I was reading about a venture, a bookshop venture you have. Now, you're notoriously known for curating the greenhouse at the Wapping Project, which is a wonderful bookshop. But I understand this is going to have a home during the month of March in COS, the fashion retailer's space.
We've already had our residency, which was, I'm notorious for curating, which is nice to know. We had 2 weeks in COS, which was an interesting venture, and I should thank COS for their help. Tove Nielsen there was very good.
Now, how did that come about? I mean, it's, for a fashion boutique to curate a pop-up bookshop, in effect.
They came to the bookshop and liked what we were doing, or what I was doing with the shop, and I think wanted to give it a helping hand, really. And I think, as you know, with it being a difficult time economically for everyone, I think everyone is very keen to help out and to cross-pollinate and to give people opportunities. And it was a great opportunity for us. We had a small bookshop built into the COS store on Regent Street, in which I sat for 2 weeks.
Oh, it was you.
It was me.
I did walk past it.
Did you walk past it?
I did enjoy it, but obviously it's lovely to meet you properly now. You talk about, that's obviously a very unusual place to have an outlet, but you don't distribute in magazine shops, do you?
We do distribute.
Oh, you do. Sorry.
Yeah, we do distribute magazine shops, but we do very well through slightly unusual outlets as well. We sell through a lot through galleries, and we try and have little partnerships, such as with Bold Tendencies, which is a sculpture park down in Peckham in South London, and they have a little shop, and we do events with them, and try and make sales there. So I think. We really have to, I think every magazine now to survive has to explore new and different ways of getting out there and selling.
Benjamin, let's move on to what magazines you've brought in with us to review. Tell us what you've got.
I've brought in a poetry magazine called the Friary Road Press, which is an unusual little screen-printed booklet.
Astonishing. It's almost insignificant physically, and then you pick it up and you think, actually, no, this is quite good.
Yes,
it's quite good fun.
I think that kind of
pamphlet feeling.
Pamphlet feel is quite key, and it has a lovely screen printed cover made by an artist called Bobby Dowler, and it collects together young poets from South London. And I brought it in because I think it's an important example of the kind of publishing ventures that are going on, in spite of all the doom mongering about the future of print. There are a lot of people doing small things on very tight budgets and getting them out there. And there's a lot of good work there. It just takes a bit of time to discover who puts this together?
Who's behind the...
Sophia Stevie, who lives down in Peckham and is a friend.
I was going to say, it looks like a very close cultural community. Hannah Berry, known from the Hannah Berry Gallery, has 3 poems in here. It looks like you're pulling together all the creative and intellectual energy of a tight group of
friends. I mean, I work for Hannah Berry as well. I work at the gallery, so it is quite a tight network and an exciting one down there.
The Bloomsbury set in Peckham.
We'll see.
Gillian, what have you got?
I have, I was very excited when I went to the magazine store to find that the Acne Papers' new tome is out. It's their spring issue, issue 13. And Acne is sort of custom house publishing, in effect, for the fashion retailer, and is always themed. Every issue is themed. This one is themed on the body and has an amazing, amazing collection of work from photography to essays, contemporary to surreal to archival, all based around the theme of the body.
It's astonishing. It's a very physical, and obviously it would be very physical magazine.
I pass it around, but it's almost too big. Huge. But you can have
it's been described as one of the best little fashion magazines. Now that is possibly a reasonably inaccurate description because it's huge.
But what I love about it is that, you know, it really does have a cult following, but for all the best reasons. You know, it is about the articles, it is about the quality of the paper, it is about the photography, and it's that level of anticipation that's quite rare for when the next issue comes out.
Benjamin, I've brought in Lionheart magazine. Tell me what you think of it.
I've never seen this magazine before.
It's issue one.
So I am, this is a very brief introduction, but it's very beautiful. It has a lot of the... a lot of the things that I think are evident in new publishing ventures. It's very beautifully designed. It's very idiosyncratically designed. It's immediately recognisable. It's on nice paper. It's very, it just has its own feeling. I think there's a lot of effort that's gone into the design, and that's nice to see.
We had a bit of a look at it in the office, and I must confess, we thought, yes, we completely agree. This is very beautiful. But it seems to be a rather female teenager stuck in a room, quite very, very gauche, and I'd be interested to see what you think of the writing another day.
I'll have to come back to you on that. Want to say.
Very different from the White Review.
Being neither female nor
teenage. Extremely different from the White Review, and something which I don't know. I don't know whether I'll be going rushing out to buy it. I think I said something quite unpleasant about the publishers earlier on this morning. what did you think of Lionheart, Julian?
Well, I agree. I loved the design of it. I think it was a very fresh take. And I was kind of intrigued by it because I think it goes back to, again, the thing of people wanting to make things. And you just feel it was perhaps a woman who's given up her professional life and lives in a small farm in Wales and decided that, you know...
You said so much.
Magazines are good things and I'm going to make one.
We'll have to leave it there. Benjamin Eastman, editor of The White Review, thank you very much indeed for coming in and talking to us. That brings us to the end of our Saturday Review. For now, it's goodbye from us all here. Today's show was produced by Marcus Hippie, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and our sound engineer was Alex Jakes. You've been listening to The Review here on Monocle 24. Thanks for listening.